We're in OUJYC's Shirkley on the Parshan, Parshat Balak. Baruch Hashem, we're having Shir this week in the end. We've entered into the realm where when I have, you know, the Torahs that I've been working off of from my Rebbe, so everything gets shorter and shorter and smaller as we get on in Sefer Bamidbar. So this Shir that I listened to is on Parshiot, Balak and Pinchas. If you look at the bulk of Pesukim in those two Parshiot, that's a lot of material to cover in 40 minutes. There's really only 15 minutes on Balak. So Baruch Hashem worked out, I spent the kind of last couple of days opening up those 15 minutes over like around 10 hours into this amazing exploration of what Parshat Balak is about. So I give that preface because as we go deeper into Devarim, into Bamidbar more and more, it's definitely mevusas, founded on the philosophies of and teachings of my Rebbe, but there's each year more and more of my own stuff in there, so it's definitely a blend of both. But I have some really exciting things that I found that I hope you will think is in line with what the Torah is saying, and hopefully we'll be learning together some really exciting new things. So let's jump in. We ended last week's Parsha, Parshat Chukat, and we talked about that in the context of Parshat Chukat, that we came to the last Pasuk where we arrive in Arvot Moav and Yodin Recho. We somehow, in Parshat Chukat, fast forward 38 years in the desert, and we come to the final year in the desert. We land in our final station in the desert, Al Arvot Moav, Al Yodin Recho, by Arvot Moav, right outside of Moav, across from Yericho on the Jordan River. And this is where we're going to stay for the rest of Torah. For the rest of Chumash, this is where we're going to stay. We've come to that final station of that journey. So first of all, one of the things that means that the challenges that we're going to face are entirely new and different challenges. Last time we talked about the fact that while there was initially clearly intended to be one generation, we either talked about it or I learned about it afterward, I don't remember because it all blends into one thing now, but while there was initially intended to be one generation that was, this, I don't think we talked about it, the same generation of Yotzei Mitzrayim and Ba'ei Ha'aretz, the generation that left Egypt and the generation that entered into Egypt, entered into Eretz Yisrael, was supposed to be the same generation. It was supposed to be one fluid movement, one people, one task, one goal that would have brought, which we did discuss last time, history to its close as we entered into Eretz Yisrael and brought the world to its tikkun. Because of many different aspects, including things that go all the way back to Chet Ha'Egel, but certainly Chet HaMeraglim, that generation gets divided, or rather that generation comes to an end, and a new generation has to rise that's going to be the door by Ha'aretz. Now, that didn't exist until last week's part, until Parshat Shlach. It didn't exist. There was no such thing as door by Ha'aretz. It was all one thing. It was one generation going from Egypt to Eretz Yisrael. But what that means is that this new generation that's emerging, this new generation of Ha'aretz is going to have its new identity. It is specifically that generation that's going to go into the land. And its location on Arvot Moav, which is where it's going to spend most of its time throughout Chumash, is going to be right outside of Eretz Yisrael, preparing to go into Eretz Yisrael, and its challenges, its realities are all going to relate to what it means to be the generation that's going to enter into Eretz Yisrael. That's its identity. That's what it is. That's what arose in response to Parshat Shlach, and that we saw the beginnings of already in Parshat Chukat. Now that's how this Parsha then should start off, and how it should deal with, and what it should be dealing with, just like Parshat Chukat did. And just like the Parshiot coming next, will Pinchas, Matot, Mas'e, all of Sefer Devarim, are all dealing with that very specifically, are all geared in that way. But we have this Parshat Balak which comes in, which seems almost totally in parentheses, this odd, unusual side story, which doesn't even directly seem to engage B'nai Yisrael at all. Balak, who is the king of Moab, again, we just said we came to Arvot Moab, we're now sitting right outside of Moab, a neighboring people of Eretz Yisrael. So he sees what happened, how he wiped out Sihon and Og in the end of last week's Parsha. He gets nervous, and so he goes and he hires Bilam to come and curse the Jews, because evidently the way that he thinks that he's going to stop the Jewish people is somehow through klala, is going to be through cursing them. So he brings in Bilam against God's intentions. Bilam goes anyway to do it, because it's against God's intentions, and God doesn't want to do it, and God only wants to give bracha to Klal Yisrael instead of klala. He then goes, and once, twice, he attempts to curse B'nai Yisrael, is unsuccessful, a bracha comes out instead of a klala. We then get to the third set, which is when Bilam, as the Pesukim bring out, and the whole nature of the Pesukim changed there, and the Mepharshim definitely bring out, that he then doesn't even try to curse Bnei Yisrael. He recognizes that that they're just a people that's Mivarach, and he's going to bless them, and he opens himself up for the first time to receiving Nevuah in a way where he goes and blesses them and lets that Bracha come through him. Then after that's all over, and Balak says to him, "Get out of here. What are you doing?" He says, "But before I go, I'm going to tell you what's going to be at the end of days." And then he gives a prophecy about what's going to be in the end of days and the wars between Klal Yisrael and the other nations. And he goes back to his people. This whole story, seemingly in parentheses. As an aside, then there's also, which we're not going to deal with this week, if we have Shirkli next week, which I think Bezrat Hashem probably will. Bezrat Hashem. Because it was all one shir, so the other 25 minutes were on, were on Pinchas, and I started to work on Pinchas also. So I think Bezrat Hashem will be able to do it next week. But the end of the Parsha is this, is then Bnei Yisrael sinning with the Benot Moav, which brings about a plague, which gives rise to Pinchas, which is in the Parsha of Pinchas. What that has to do with Balak, why just noting that if we're going to go through the Parsha, that is the end of the Parsha, that's the final paragraph of the Parsha. The whole Parsha is one paragraph. It's just the story of Bilam and Balak. Except for that little paragraph at the end, which we may bridge a little bit today in terms of what that's doing in this Parsha. How does that connect? It seems to be totally different stories. What we'll deal with next week probably is, why is that story then half in Balak, half in Pinchas, and how does that lead into the census in next week's Parsha? We'll get there. But that's the narrative, that's the flow. What is this whole parenthesis story doing here? How does it fit into the narrative of Sefer Bamidbar? What is it telling us about? What's the point of the story in and of itself? Forget even the narrative of Sefer Bamidbar. What is this story? It's totally unusual in the context of all of Chumash. Totally in a different space, a whole parsha taking place outside of the context of Klal Yisrael. What's the nature of Parshat Balak? Tov. So this is the first time the Jewish people are ever even coming into contact with Moab, which is, again, neighboring people living right outside of Eretz Yisrael. To understand the nature of this conflict, we're going to have to go back, way back. Looking at the origins of Moab, where does Moab itself, to understand this conflict between Moab and Klal Yisrael, this fixation on Klala versus Bracha, where is Moab coming from? Where does Moab descend from, very literally? Where is their origin point? Where?
Cham. No.
Not Cham. No. Moab, I believe the Mepharshim point out, is an unfortunate name that comes from the word Me'av, from my father.
Lot
and his daughters. Lot and his daughters, when Lot leaves Sdom, there's that very troubling and unusual interaction between him and his daughters, and he produces Moab and Ammon. So Moab is one of the descendants of Lot. Meaning that on a Ma'aseh Avot Siman LaBanim level, which is a phrase that we always use that phrase from the Ramban, which is how he really gives a beautiful, encapsulating sense of what Sefer Bereishit is. Ma'aseh Avot Siman LaBanim, that all of Sefer Bereishit is paving the way, setting the stage for what's going to unfold over history. So what's happening in the struggle between Moab, the nation of Moab, and Bnei Yisrael is a playing out of the Amaseh Avot Siman Labanim of the conflict between who and who? Lot and Avraham, the two fathers of these two peoples. And once you recognize that that's where this is coming from, we look back at those Pesukim. The fact that this whole parsha revolves around Bracha and Klala becomes a lot less surprising. Because the whole nature of the interaction between Avraham and Lot also revolves around Bracha and Klala. Let's take a look inside and unpack that a little bit. Let's see the origins of this conflict. All the way from the very beginning of Parshat Lech Lecha, where we were basically introduced to Avraham Avinu. Source number one. Vayomar Hashem al Avraham. Lech lecha mi'artzecha u'mulatetzecha u'mibet avicha el ha'aret asher eka. Leave your land, go away, seclude yourself, isolate yourself from your former surroundings, leave it all behind, and go where? Go where? There are four of you in this room. I know there's only four, but this is not a trick question. Eretz Kanan, which is later on. Eretz Yisrael, right, meaning that and if you look at that, that's basically the arc of what the Jewish people are told to do. Leave the place of your origin, leave me try. And again, we talked about that it was supposed to be even one fluid movement. I think this is actually the origins of that intended to be on a masev or similar level. It was supposed to be one fluid movement. This leaving your homeland, isolating yourself, becoming your own people, and then finding your resting place in Eretz Yisrael, here referred to as Eretz Sher Eka. Then when you get the Ve'escha Legoy Gadol, I will make you into this great and numerous nation. Va'agadla Shemecha. Sorry, Va'avarecha, that was the key word. Va'avarecha, I will give you blessing, whatever bracha or blessing means, we'll get into that in a few moments. Va'agadla Shemecha, and I will make your name great. Ve'heye Bracha. What does Ve'heye Bracha mean? What does it literally mean? What? Not there will be bracha. You will be bracha. The hayei bracha, you will be the essence of bracha in this world. By going out and doing this, by going out, isolating yourself, leaving behind everything, going to Eretz Yisrael, you will be an essence bracha, which somehow is going to have to relate to Eschal Goy Gadol, V'Agadla Shemecha, then Avarecha V'Hayei Bracha, and then we see not only that, V'Avarecha, or those who bless you will be blessed, those who curse you will be cursed. Interesting, already clearly hinting to this blessing or cursing from the outside being an issue. V'nivrechu v'cha kol mishpachot ha'adaman, all people, all nations of the world will be blessed through you. This whole thing revolving around bracha by Avram Avinu. And so he goes, and yet when he goes, Vayelech Avram kasher diber Hashem, Vayelech ito, Lot goes with him. And if you go back to the Midrashashim and Parshat Bereshit, we talk about a lot why Lot went and what his purpose in history is, and it's a whole shir b'fnei atzmo. But Lot goes with him. But here's where, we'll pause there for a second. Avram is being told, you will become bracha. Your essence is going to be bracha. You are going to be the source of bracha, the essence of bracha in this world. So first things first, let's define bracha. Before taking this anything further at all, let's define our terms. So what is bracha? Bracha is always about ribui. We often think of as a blessing, saying something nice, or I'm not sure what we think anymore exactly what a bracha is or a blessing is supposed to be. But bracha is ribui. Bracha is all about increasing, adding, multiplying. Rashi in Masechet Sota says it actually explicitly. This is a new source. I've been giving this piece over a long time. I've never seen this Rashi inside. He literally says it black on white in source number 2. Kol bracha shebimikra, every time you see bracha in Torah Shebichtav, lashon riboy hu. It's all about increasing. And it's brought out through the word itself. Even if you go back to the letters of the word, what letters make up the word, the root of the word bracha? Bet, resh, and kuf. In Gematria, bet is 2, chaf is 20, and resh, if you can tell the difference in 2 there, is 200. Every letter at the root of the word bracha is all about 2, all about multiples of 2, or rather, I mean, not just multiples of 2, 2, 20, 200, bringing out that it's all about 2. What is 2 about? 2 is about ribui. It's about multiplying. When you have 1, there's just it as a single entity. Once you introduce a second, you're entering into the world of multiple. You're entering into the world of increasing. Bracha is also related to the word brecha. What's a brecha?
Pool.
Pool is a wellspring. Pool is stationary. A brecha is a wellspring coming out and producing more water, producing new life. It's a brecha. It's also interesting, without going, just because this particular group is a very thoughtful group, so I'll leave it as food for thought, another word related to bracha is birkaim. What are birkaim? Knees. What does knees have to do with all of this conversation? And why is it that when we say Baruch Ata Hashem, when we say the word Baruch, we bend our knees, the two clearly being related to each other, even in the way that we express it halachically? Food for thought.
I get it.
But why? Okay. Food for thought.
That's the food for thought you're supposed to think.
She's thinking out loud. It's okay. But it's constantly giving out more, producing more. We see this reflected in the Pesukim as well. If you take a look, Pesukim and Tehillim that we say in the context of Hallel, source number 3. Yosef Hashem Aleichem Aleichem V'al B'neichem. Hashem will increase upon you and upon your children. When God increases upon you, when there's a hosafa, when there's more, how then do we define you? The next pasuk, Bruchim atem laHashem. Then you're in a state of bracha. When you're in a state of Yosef, in a state of hosafa, then you're in a state of bracha. Adding more, multiplying, increasing. So going back to those psukim about Avraham Avinu, and honestly, when you, like Rashi himself says, you don't need me to tell you, but like Rashi said in Sota, you look, follow through, especially when it starts talking about bracha and Sefer Devarim, in the beginning of Sefer Devarim, whenever it talks about issues of bracha, it's all about, I will multiply you, you will have tons of children, and there will be tons of grain in your fields, and there will be, and your animals will be fruitful. It's always about there being more bounty in this world in a positive way. But watch in Chumash, as you go through the next few months of Parshiyot, and you can look for the entire year between now and the next time in all of Chumash, it's always the same. But especially, there are notable moments that I can think of in my mind over the next few Parshiyot. Whenever it talks about bracha, it's always about suddenly like this explosion of life in this world. More in this world. So if you look already by Avraham Avinu, again, read the Pesukim with me again in source number 1. Vayomar Shem el Avraham, Lech lecha me'aretzcha me'laretzcha v'chulei, ve'e'escha l'goy gadol. I will make a great and numerous nation of you. Va'avarechecha. I will make your name great. I will spread out your name throughout the world. And you will be the source of bracha.
But it's weird that the avarecha is like in between those things. Like, why doesn't it come first?
I agree. And I was thinking about that also when I was preparing. I didn't have time to look deeper into those psukim and breishit. There's a new level for me in those psukim and breishit. Good question. But it doesn't change the fact that it's all in the same pasuk. But it does need to be unpacked. I would like to say Avarechecha first, and then those two things, and then Hayei Brecha. Why is it in the middle? Great question. It's a local question, and hopefully Mepharshim do deal with it somewhere in there. Tov, you had a question before, though.
Oh, I just wanted to say that if you're looking at the word, like, Barich, if you play a little bit around with the words, you can say the Reish and the Bat, Rove, Rimboy, but, like, minus the Chaf.
That Rav is in there.
Yeah, but if you play around with the letter, it's nothing like.
Could be. No, it's a good point, especially in terms of what the word Rav is about, and then why is the word Rav leave out the Chaf? What's the difference between Rav and Barech? Are they connected? In what ways are they distant? Definitely, it's good thinking. That's like moving things along. Yes, it's a good thing. I'm saying, like, you're on a good thinking path.
I just didn't think it was that, like, significant, because it's really playing around with the letters.
No, it's not. It's saying two of the letters that are at the heart of that also have to do with Riboy. What? No, well, two of the building blocks, the way that the deeper sources describe it is that letters are like the stones out of which you build a bayit. Right? So each stone is significant, but you're pointing out that two of the fundamental stones that make up that word themselves produce a different word, which is linked to it. That's 100% legitimate. Yeah, that's very good thinking. Okay. See, so when we give things food for thought, so we know it's going to go somewhere. Tov, let's take it further. So that's what Avram is told in those psukim you read in Bereishit, the opening of Parshat Lech Lecha. That's what Avram is told will happen if he agrees to go. But where do we see it play out? Meaning, here he's saying, go and this will happen to you. When does God say, now I'm telling you, you will be Baruch? Now I'm telling you, it will happen. So take a look in source number 4. Source number 4 opens up after Avram goes down to Egypt and survives the difficulties that he experiences in Egypt. He comes back up, they settle back in the land, and then there's the argument between the Ro'im, the shepherds of Lot, and the shepherds of Avraham Avinu over pasture. So Avraham Avinu decides, okay, fine, we're going to have to split up. Where do you want to go? Lot chooses Sodom, and that obviously has its ramifications down the road in Parshat Lech Lecha and Vayira. And Avraham Avinu then is left. Now listen to the Pesukim here. Watch the Pesukim here. The underline in Pasuk Yudalad. Source number 4. Vashem Amar al Avraham. Acharehi pared Lot me'imo. God says to Avram, as soon as Lot is separated from him, Sana einecha, open your eyes and look up. Re'ei mina makom asher atem, asher atah sham tzafona banegba v'kedma v'yama. Look from where you are in all directions. Ki et kol ha'aretz asher atah ro'eh lecha et nena lezarecha olam. I will give this whole land to you and your children forever. V'samtem V'samti et zaracha ke'afar ha'aretz, and I will make your children as numerous as the dust of the earth. In yuchalish limnot et afar ha'aretz gam zaracha yemeneh. Only if someone can count all the dust on the earth will they be able to count your offspring. Again, here, this concept of bracha immediately having to do with increasing on the land. When is it that he's told, when is that moment where he's told that he will, that reality of bracha is going to come a part of him? That he's going to inherit this expanse of the land, that he's going to multiply into this huge nation? In the same pasuk. Right? So Leora said. In the same pasuk as when Lot leaves him. That seems to be the prerequisite for him receiving a reality of bracha. V'Hashem amar el Avram, acharehi pared Lot meimo. Now that Lot's left, now I can tell you the following.
But now he has like a preza in order to get the hosafa, we said.
Say again?
There's a preza, but now he needs the hosafa.
By removing Lot from the system, now the bracha can properly channel through him. Because as we're going to transition to, basically immediately, that when the nation of Moab, the descendant of Lot, there seems to be this inherent struggle of Avram receiving bracha, expressing bracha, in contrast to Lot, it's the conflict between bracha and klala. And so when the descendants of Lot, Moab, then want to come and attack Klal Yisrael, and are playing out that Maaseh Avot Siman Labanim, there are many ways that they could have gone out and attacked Klal Yisrael. How do they choose to go and fight Klal Yisrael? They specifically go and look to bring somebody in who's going to be Mekalel Klal Yisrael. Somehow coming through Lot is the koach of klala. Is setting one's sights on klala. Is a focus on klala. And so the descendants of Lot are fighting the bracha aspect of Klal Yisrael and trying to bring klala to Klal Yisrael. That's how they're going to attack them. That's how they're going to play that out.
So Lot is the source of it? Meaning like where the source of bracha is, but is what Avraham was told.
I'm going to save this for later, but then let's jump to a later source just to show how strong that is. It's later on in your source sheet. Source number 12 on the other side of the page. It's inherent in who he is. So much so that it permeates even his name. If you take a look in Aramaic, when the Gemara wants to talk about how to curse, what curses, the word in Aramaic in the Gemara for curse is lat. Lat means to curse. Take a look at verse number 12. It's there's no significance to this particular example. It's just an example of the word lot being used in Chazal. Yativ Kamar, Dilma ki melat Yeshua hachilat. When Yeshua would come to curse, meaning when he cursed that nobody should build up Yericho again, this is how he would. This is how he framed his curse, hachilat. But Lot's name literally means curse. Curse is stemming from him. It doesn't play out in terms of his clear coming against Avraham in that way in Sefer Bereishit, but it's clear that he's keeping the bracha from coming through. That expresses itself in Moav, which comes to fight it with Klal. I personally, this is where things start to get muddled, and I, you know, what I, where I'm adding in things that I was playing around with over the last few days. But that's why I actually underlined for you the one thing where I see it kind of perhaps hinted to. Is in the beginning of source number 4. It's all one paragraph. When Lot and the shepherds of Lot and the shepherds of Avram fight, and they have to split, and they have to go off on their own, and then he can receive bracha. It's all one paragraph in the Chumash. Why is that all one paragraph? Meaning, what are they fighting over to begin with?
The land of Eretz
Yisrael. And? Who it belongs to. What's the issue?
If their animals can eat from it.
There's not enough. There's not enough. There's no room to expand. That's where the conflict stems from. And we'll see that that actually plays very much into what Kala is about as we go forward, like from here, like at this very moment. So I think that that's the hint to even the Kala aspect of Lot, beyond his name, even in the Bereishit level. That once we move away from somebody who feels those limitations, who can't experience that expansion, there's no room, then the bracha can come out through Avraham Avinu, when we remove that from the system. But the full expression of the kala orientation of Moav, or it's coming to attack, even more than that, or it's more fine-tuned than that, the fact that Moav is coming to attack the bracha aspect of Klal Yisrael. Now, how are you going to do that? Through kala. But he's coming against the bracha aspect of Klal Yisrael, that's going to really manifest Moav. And when you realize that, if you look at it also, Moav isn't able to bring the kala. Where does Moav go to bring the kala?
Klal Yisrael.
They have to go to Bil'am. So if Moav is really the source of Klala, they shouldn't have to go. They shouldn't have to outsource it. They shouldn't have to hire somebody from the outside. So I think it's that Lot and Moav are kineged Klal Yisrael. They're kineged the aspect of bracha in Klal Yisrael, and they do that through Klala. That's, I think, a better definition. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. But I appreciate the question. I think that's, and I was thinking about that over the last few days as well. I think that's where it's coming from. Okay. So let's take it forward. Now we start to fly. So in Moab, the descendant of Lot is coming to attack Klal Yisrael. It comes to attack, like we said, the aspect of bracha on Klal Yisrael through Klala. And in looking for somebody to curse Klal Yisrael, they find Bil'am. Let's take a look together at the first Klala of Bil'am, and already these issues of what Klala is and how deeply the Klala is coming against this bracha aspect of Klal Yisrael comes out already from the very first Klala of Bil'am, or Klala turned into a bracha. Source number 5, I believe in your sheets. Yeah. Vayisamish lo vayomar, he begins his parable and says this is the first klala turned bracha of Bil'am. Minaram yanchini balak melech Moav miharei kedem lecha arali Yaakov lecha zoma Yisrael, he brought me in to come and curse Klal Yisrael. Ma'akov lo kabo kel u'ma'azom lo za'am Hashem. How can I curse Bnei Yisrael if God doesn't want them to be cursed? And how can I bring anger on Klal Yisrael if God is not angry with them? Skipping forward to the middle of source of pasuk tet, let me read through. Ki mirosh tzrim erenu migvaot ashrenu, and here the underline. Hin an levadav yishkon, they are a nation who dwells alone. We will also come back to that. Uvagoyim leil chashav, mimana. Listen to the words here. Mimana afar Yaakov, umispar et rova Yisrael. What does that mean? Who can count the dust of Yaakov? And who can count even a quarter of Israel? What does that sound like?
There's so many.
What does it sound exactly like?
A bracha.
The exact bracha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives to Avram Avinu. Bringing out literally that same parallel Lashon. Look at the two side, back to back. Mimana afar Yaakov mispar adrova Yisrael. V'samti et zaracha ke'afar ha'aretz. Asher im yuchal ish limnot et afar ha'aretz. Gam zaracha yimaneh. It's almost a parallel Lashon. So not only is the first bracha relating to this aspect of them as being baruch, in their being multiplied, look at the way that the Gemara understands how the brachot of Bil'am are structured, where they come from. Source number 6. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. We can learn out from every word that he blesses Klal Yisrael with, we can learn what Bil'am's intent was. Which means if Bil'am gives them a bracha that they are numerous as the dust of the earth, what was the intent of Bil'am? To curse them in limiting them. His goal was to say the opposite. Every bracha, every klala that he said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu turned it on its head. Turned it 180 degrees. So if he says, wow, look how beautiful Klal Yisrael is and how numerous they are. They're as infinite as the dust of the earth. Then the intent of the klala was to confine them, to limit them, to fix them. Because that in and of itself is what klala is all about. Additionally, look at the way that he uses to curse. There's a very odd word here that's used for curse. What's the word for curse here in this paragraph? Pasuk chet. Ma'akov lo kabo kel. Kabo is the word here for curse. Which Ari points out is probably related to the content of a kav that's used in halachic terminology. Like kav ba'arba amot. It's a measure. It's a fixed, finite measure. What's the connection between a word for measurement and a word for curse? That what cursing is limiting, is fixing, is making something finite, is giving it a definitive measure. If you take a look, it's brought out even more so in the Gemaran in Ta'anit, source number 7. Amar Yitzchak, Ein ha-bracha mitzuya ela badavar hasamui min ha'ayin. Bracha can exist, or rather, to flip it, bracha can only exist in a place that's hidden from the eyes. If you can't see it, if you can't count it, it's mivorach. If you can see it, if you can count it, it's not able to receive bracha. There's a different, slightly different phraseology in the next underline. Eina bracha mitzuya ela b'davar she'in ha'ayin sholetet bo. Bracha can only exist in a place where the eye doesn't rule, where the eye doesn't lord over it. The Gemara actually then goes and continues based on this and says that back in the day, we don't do this anymore. We don't say this, the bracha with Shema Malchus. We don't say it with God's name. But before, the farmers would go and they would go to count the grain inside of their silos. They would, with God's name, go and say a bracha that it says in that Gemara and ask for bracha to come on the grain. Says the Gemara, a person who comes and goes to count the grain and says the bracha, great! However, comes a person, counts all of their grain, and then says the bracha. Says the Gemara, Madad v'achar kach beirach, the last underline, if he counts and then he says the bracha, hariz etzfilat shav. It's a meaningless bracha, it's a bracha levatala. Lefi she'ein ha-bracha mitzuya lo b'davar ha-shakul, v'lo b'davar ha-madud, v'lo b'davar ha-manoi. Bracha can't be in a place that's already weighed out, that's already measured, that's already counted. Ela b'davar ha-samoi min ha-ayin. Bracha has no reality in a place that's limited, that's fixed, because it's anti-bracha. Bracha is all about expanding, increasing. Klala is all about limiting, making finite, removing that ability to increase. So I was going back to the B'skim, and from this point forward is basically all new for me, so certainly from this point forward, if anything is incorrect, the mistakes are 110% mine. But you went back and go and look at the psukim, and it's like screaming it. Every time, it's such a weird thing, every time that Bilam goes to curse, and he ends up blessing instead of cursing, Balak freaks out at him, which is understandably so. You know, you hire somebody to go and give a shir, and they turn on a comedy instead and put it on in front of the group. So you'd be really annoyed because they're not doing their job, right? It's a really bad example. He cursed Bnei Yisrael, and he's like, great, and then he goes and bless. So fine, he says that I can only do what God tells me to do, but underlying the whole story, it's clear that Bilam is really hoping that God will let him curse, and that Balak is really assuming that he's going to let him curse. Or why would he have shown up? So it doesn't work out. What does the Balak then each time say when it doesn't work out, other than what are you doing? For he says, what are you doing? Then he says, you know what? Here's what we're going to do. What are we going to do next? Let's go somewhere else. Let's go to another location, and from there, maybe the klala will work. What does one do with the other? Look at the psukim. Those are the next three quotes. Source number 8, this is before each one of the klalot, or the intended klalot, the turns of brachot. Vayiva boker, vayikach balak et bil'am, vayaliu b'mot ba'al, vayar misham tse ha'am. He took him to us, you can only see a small portion of the edge of the people. And when that doesn't work, for the next klal, the most explicit verse, where it was I was like, this is clearly in line with everything that's happening in this parsha. Source number 9, vayomer la balak. Balak says to him, after the bracha doesn't work and it becomes a klala, Lechana iti, come with me on makom acher, to a different place. Asher chenu sham, it's not good enough just to see ktzeam. Asher chenu mitzam, efes katzehu tireh. We're gonna slice off a teeny little bit of the end of it. We're gonna only look at a fixed, finite, small portion of it. We're gonna look at a part of it. In my mind, what he's saying here is we'll be able to look at a part that we can limit, that we can fix, that we can make finite. We're gonna cut off that small end of it. Because in that place, if we can, so to speak, and I don't think he means this literally, but so to speak, if we come to a part of it where it's so, all you can see is that small edge of it, and you can really count it, and you can really look at it in a way, your eye can look at it where you can count it and have ownership of it and make it finite, then bracha can be, excuse me, then klala can be chal over there. That's why we need to switch locations. We need to look for a place where you can only see just that little bit where you can count it. Sholetet bo ha'ayin. Your eye can rule over it. And that will allow for the brachas cut off. That will allow for a reality of kalah to set in. That's what seems to me to be the case. On the flip side, when Bil'am finally then, by the third time, gives up on trying to curse Klal Yisrael and opens himself up to bracha, look at the words. It's no longer about trying to see this finite, fixed, limited portion of Klal Yisrael. He turns around and watches the Lashon here as he then embraces the infinite nature of Klal Yisrael. He finally takes that in. First of all, the first word is Vayar. He opens up his sight to it. Vayar Bil'am. Interesting. Ki tov be'enei Hashem livarech et Yisrael. From God's perspective, using specifically, and most of the parsha uses the Lashon Elokim, fixed, finite, the more din-oriented name of God, now suddenly the name Yudkei Vavkei comes playing. The vantage point of the God who is infinite, the God who is beyond. He's opening himself up to that eyesight. Vayar b'lam ki tov b'nei Yudkei Vavkei, livarech et Yisrael. V'lo alach kepam v'fam nirkrat nechashim. Vayashet et elamid bar panav, and he opens his face up to the entirety of their expanse in the desert. And he opens up his eyes, again not looking to limit, he's opening up his vision here, to not trying to count and limit and fix it, but to the expanse of Klal Yisrael. Vayaret Yisrael shochen lishvatav, and he sees them all beautifully arranged according to their shvatim. Parentheses, we'll come back to it, a very Bamidbar oriented term. Right, they were never organized by Shvatim before. They were referred to as Shvatim until we got to Sefer Midbar. And somehow this bracha is stemming from him seeing them organized by their Shvatim. That we will come back to. That's not just food for thought. We will come back to that. But to hear Lav Ruach Elohim. And then he's able to be filled with the spirit of Elohim. It's also interesting. This is where this funny Lashon also comes in. Ne'um Bilam Beno Be'or. Says Bil'am, the son of Nor, Ne'um ha-gever shetum ha'ayin. Says the person with an open eye. Suddenly now, this weird phraseology as an introduction to his bracha doesn't exist in the first two brachot. Now suddenly he's Ne'um ha'ayin. He is shetum ha'ayin. Suddenly now he's uncovered eyes and clearly able to see. Ne'um shomea imrekel asher machazeh shakai yechazeh, who sees the visions of Shakai. No fellow gluei naim, whose eyes are open. I mean, this paragraph is suddenly packed with these words about vision and clarity and open eyes and openness to the expanse that's out there. And then he's able to see another phrase that we'll come back to very shortly, perhaps the most famous line from all of the brachot of Bil'am. Matovu ohalecha Yaakov mishnotecha Yisrael. How great are your tents, O Yaakov, your dwelling places, O Israel, which becomes actually part of our tefillah, which is an interesting thing. So pure, so to speak, was this bracha, meaning it wasn't a kala that turned to a bracha. It was him opening himself up to the bracha itself, regardless of what his intent was. That even becomes a part of our tefillah. And it's the only one, says the Gemara, that actually remains a bracha for all generations. It doesn't flip on its head when we get into the end of the parsha with Benot Moav. Says the Gemara, that all of these klalot that were turned to brachot, once the issue with the Benot Moav comes up at the end of the Parsha, they all go back to being klalot, except for Matov Alecha Yaakov. So we'll come back to this pasuk also soon. But you see in this whole opening of this last bracha, just when he opens up to what bracha is about, into letting himself be mivarach Klal Yisrael, I think the words here also bring out this deep aspect of what bracha is all about, and him being the varech, this people whose essence is bracha. Doesn't mean we're getting really nitpicky, but it's fun to be able to add these things in this context. I also think it's interesting that that at this point, when Balak has finally had it, how does Balak stop him from giving his bracha? Normally he responds and he reacts, he's just like, "What are you doing?" But in this one he's like, what does he do? What's the underline? Pasuk Yud, Vayicharaf Balak El Bil'am, Vayispok at Kapav. Masa Vayispok at Kapav. Claps his hands. But it's a weird way of saying clapping your hands. Vayispok at Kapav. So I think the hands being the farthest extremity of the body, meaning he's reacting with that which limits, that which is finite, that which is stopping things. Vayispok Milashon Lahafsik. He's trying to stop the bracha. So he stops the way he spoke at Kapav. Berachav Shar. I think that's interesting. That's his response, is actually to try to limit this bracha that's coming out. But Berachav Shar. Tof. So again, coming back to the fact that Lot is the source of where all of this is coming from, the fact that, as we discussed already before we got to the source in the source sheet, source number 12, that Lot actually means curse, that what's really happening here in Parshat Balak is a playing out of that Maaseh Votziman Lebanim, that tension between Avraham and Lot over issues of Bracha, is now playing itself out on a national level between the nation of Moab and Klal Yisrael also struggling specifically around the issue of bracha. So you've given context to the story. You've filled it with a little bit more content also. Why is this happening in this way? But what is it doing here? We still haven't answered that fundamental question. What is it doing here? So coming back to what we started off here with. This story isn't just telling us about Moab and Klal Yisrael. In a broader context, having just come to the border of Eretz Yisrael, about to enter into Eretz Yisrael, about to come against the other nations, about to define ourselves in the contrast to the other nations as we find our place, our makom, that we're supposed to settle in. What it's doing is this interaction is defining the nature of our relationship, of the relationship between Klal Yisrael and all of the nations of the world. It's a paradigm for the relationship between Klal Yisrael and all of the nations of the world. And this concept of the relationship between Klal Yisrael and all of the nations of the world is something which comes up throughout the brachot, nowhere near as much or as obviously or as overtly as in the final bracha, or the final vision, which even opens up in source number 13. This is, you know, one was supposed to be a klalatrin to a bracha, two was supposed to be a klalatrin to a bracha, three, Bilam is up and just gives a bracha. Four is, after he's told go home, he says, wait, before I go, says Bilam, I have something to tell you, Balak. And that's source number 13. V'ata hineni olech lami, fine, I'll go back to my people. But before I go, let me tell you what this nation is going to do to you in the end of days. And then it goes on for the rest of the paragraph to talk about what's going to be between Klal Yisrael and all of the other nations at the end of days. Some going nation by nation by nation. So there's a lot here about the interaction between Klal Yisrael and all of the other nations of the world. The fact that this revolves also around issues of bracha and klala shouldn't be surprising, because we actually read that explicitly. Go back again to first pasuk in Lech Lecha. Source number one. Go. Remove yourself from your place of origin. Isolate yourself. Go to Eretz Yisrael, which is Eretz Yerecha, which is Eretz Kanaan, which then is Eretz Yisrael, as we go along that road. Or pasuk gimel, v'nivrechu becha kol mishpachot adama. There's the promise here that since you, in your essence, Avraham, and so too your people, are going to be in essence bracha, are going to be a living reality of bracha. Through you, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the very opening pesukim. V'nivrechu becha, through you and through your people, all of the nations of the world are going to receive their bracha. And this struggle over the bracha aspect of Klal Yisrael is not just an internal concept within Klal Yisrael. It's not even just between Avraham and Lot, or between Yisrael and Moab. It's the struggle of the fact that the place, the reality of Klal Yisrael, is that they're meant to be the ones through which bracha comes into the world for all of the nations of the world. Taking that one step further, and this is, to a certain extent, thinking out loud. See if you think this is correct or incorrect, but I think this is true. We are the ones who are channeling Hashem in this world. We're the ones challenging HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is the source of bracha. And we're meant to be an infinite people, a borderless people, an endless people, in an infinite, endless land, in a land of bracha, through which bracha comes out to the world. Bracha comes from us to the world. It comes from us in Eretz Yisrael, which is what Avraham was told. Go to Eretz Yisrael, and when you get there, and you settle there, and if you live up to this, then you will be mivorach, you will haye bracha. But there's a condition. It's about us being a people of bracha in a land of bracha. That's how this reality is going to come about. This one small example of just how much it also comes through the land. Take a look in source number 14. It talks about the fact, Eretz Yisrael shotem me gishamim. This is a whole Gemara. It talks about differences between Eretz Yisrael and the rest of the world. Very beautiful Gemara on Masechet Ta'anit. So it says that Eretz Yisrael drinks directly the rainwaters. The rainwaters is when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us breath, when He gives us blessing, right? It comes out through the rain. Because that's what allows an abundance of life to rise in this world. What allows people to live, it's what allows crops to grow. V'tein bracha, v'tein tal, umatar livracha. Right, it's all about bracha. So Eretz Yisrael Shotem Megeshamim, it's drawing directly from there. V'chol ha'olam kulo mitamsit. The whole world drinks from the remnants of the waters that come through Eretz Yisrael. Meaning the direct channel of bracha is where? In Eretz Yisrael. And everything else is drawing from that. Eretz Yisrael shotet chila. Eretz Yisrael drinks first. V'chol ha'olam kulo levasof. And then everybody, the rest of the world afterward. That's part of what Eretz Yisrael is. It's part of what the Jewish people are. We're bringing that bracha into the world. So I was thinking a lot. How does that work? What's the mechanism of that? How does that come out through the story, through the narrative, through the brachot of Bil'am? Eric sort of mentioned that and then went away from it because it was, again, there was only 15 minutes there to draw from. And I went back and just sat there with the Pesukim and looked at some of the Chazals and some of the Rashis and thinking about it. What is it about Kol Yisrael? What is it that he's saying here? So one of the other well-known Pesukim, I think the two most well-known Pesukim are not Matov Alecha Yaakov, and on the flip side, Am Levadav Yishkon, that we're a nation who sits by themselves. That we need to be separate, like with the emphasis on Avram, you know, you need to separate yourself out from your homeland. So too, by Klal Yisrael being separate, by Klal Yisrael remaining within itself, that's somehow it brings in the bracha. And I was thinking that maybe that has to do with the fact, perhaps, that only by keeping a reality of staying within our own boundaries, issues that we talked about going back to Sefer Shmot, because Sheva Shmot is inescapable, right? Going back to Sefer Shmot, we've gone back to Bereishis Shmot, maybe we'll touch on Vayikra today, right? Going back to Sefer Shmot, that we're people who stays, who there's almost a mysterious nature about us. When we're going through the desert, remember we talked about the clouds around us, and that gives the reality of kavod, and that kavod is when something is covered up, which means that I can't see it, but now I know that it's significant because I can't see it. That by being an Am Levadav Yishkon, we have to separate ourselves out and be a nation that's totally unto ourselves. That what allows the bracha to flow through us is the fact that we keep that reality of tzniut about us. We keep that reality of maintaining borders and boundaries, which seems to be a kol aspect. We keep borders and boundaries, meaning we keep a separation from the other aspects of the world. Bracha only comes when, for Avram Avinu? When Lot is separated from him. When we take out all other elements from the system. When we become only unto ourselves. We can then channel in the bracha into ourselves. We can be a place where the infinite can exist. Where HaKadosh Baruch Hu can exist. The infinite can exist. And bring in bracha into the world. Then I came to the Matov Alecha Yaakov piece. And here's where it all sort of came together. In my mind. Bear with me on this. See where it goes. Matov Alecha Yaakov Mishnotecha Yisrael. So first of all, two things. When you go back to those psukim, let's take a look at the psukim themselves inside first before we go any further. Where were they? Which source is it for you?
11,
thank you. Let's take a look inside. Remember we said that Bilam looked in Pasuk Bet, Vayisa Bilam et Enav, Vayara et Yisrael Shochen Lishvatav. He sees them organized by their different shvatim. And from seeing that, which seems to be, again, also limiting, they're all very defined, finite, limited, specific. That seems to be the opposite of bracha. Shochen lishvatav. And then that brings up Matovu Alecha Yaakov. How great are the tents of Yaakov. Over the course of these, if you were to stack these, Am Levadav Yishkon, Shochen lishvatav, Matovu Alecha Yaakov, it's almost like we're getting smaller and smaller in our scope. Am Levadav Yishkon, we're separate as a nation. Then we're organized by our shvatim, and then each tent somehow is uniquely, specifically beautiful and wonderful, down to each person's tent. If you take a look at what Rashi says on Matov Alecha Yaakov, source number 15. So Rashi says that what is this Matov Alecha Yaakov? Al shira'a pitcheihem she'enan mechuvanim ze mu ze. That was significant about the tents. What did he say that was so beautiful? It was that they were all set up in these camps, and in these camps they all had tents. They lived in these tents. And that Klal Yisrael made sure that when they organized their tents, the doorway of one tent would never ever face the doorway of another tent. Why is that? No one could see inside. It maintained a reality of tzniut in Klal Yisrael. That that's what Matov Alach Yaakov is bringing out according to Rashi here, based on Chazal. We'll see Chazal in a second. I was like, wow, again, that's all about limiting. That's all about limiting. It's all about limiting it, not only just to each Shevet, but now limiting it so far into each individual family. What is that really bringing out? I think it brings out the following. The beauty of what Klal Yisrael is a Klal, and the beauty of what each individual Ohel within Klal Yisrael is as well, is the fact that the tents don't let each other see inside, which means that it maintains that reality of tzniut. It's maintaining a reality of tzniut in the bayit. Meaning, when I see something, I limit it. That's klala. When I can't see something, then what is it? It's mivorach. Bracha is only sure in a place where the eye can't see. Klal Yisrael are a people who are meant to understand that I am infinite. My relationship with my spouse, in which brings HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the source of bracha in the world, all of that is infinite. I'm infinite, my spouse is infinite, our relationship is infinite. My family brings a little bit of the infinite into the world, in that bayit, in that ohel. But what allows that to happen is that there's no ayin that shalate on it. No person looks into those most inner chambers. No person looks into those deepest chambers. And that we as a people make sure to go out of our way, that we design ourselves that our tents never even face each other. Totally isolated. Because through that isolation, it keeps all eyes off. It maintains that privacy that allows the bracha of the infinite to flow in. I think that's the beauty of Matov Alecha Yaakov. And that's microcosmic of what's meant to be for Klal Yisrael. Because Rashi, I forgot to put the, I apologize, I didn't add that Rashi once I found it to the sheet as well. I jumped on the Matov Alecha Yaakov that I didn't even get to the next Rashi after that. Mishkanotecha Yisrael, Rashi says, what's Mishkanotecha Yisrael? That within you is the place of the Shekhinah, which is the Beit HaMikdash. It's the same thing, and we always made that parallel in Sefer Shemot. That each home is supposed to be a microcosm of Beit HaMikdash, which itself also is built that way. More inner, more chambers, more inner chambers, more inner chambers, to finally get to a place where there's a parochet that covers up and nobody is ever allowed to see inside, except at very, very specific times just for the Jewish people, in times of pure love. That's it. But that curtain always stays there, because what's inside is that unique one-on-one relationship that's meant to be private of Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what's being brought out here. That by being an Am Levadad Yishkon in Eretz Yisrael, by being Am Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael, we're able to funnel the bracha in the world because we're not able to be seen, because we're holding on to that limitations, we're holding on to a reality of ourselves, we're keeping ourselves closed off from the eyes of the other nations who are trying to limit us by defining us, by looking at us, by limiting us. By maintaining that privacy, we maintain an ability to channel bracha both nationally and each individual bayit in Klal Yisrael as well. But fundamental to Sefer Bamidbar is the unity between all of those unique individual elements of Klal Yisrael. So I went to the original Gemara that Rashi's quoting here, because you should never ever look at something that's quoting something else and not look at the original source. So I went to the original source. And then I fell off my chair. I didn't know what to do with myself. I ran home and I just started babbling to Shoshana, because I just need to share it with someone. Look at the way the Gemara and Mishnah are phrased! Where he's getting this from. Source number 16. The Mishnah itself just gives a halakha. The halakha, which it's then going to learn from these psukim, is Lo yiftach adam nachas yaretz dafin petach keneged petach v'chalon keneged chalon. A person can open a door keneged a door, or a window keneged a window. But in what scenario can you not open a door? Can I get a door and a window? Can I get a window? In what scenario? What's the situation of the Mishnah? We're only so many words that we read. I guess Leon was excited. Excited me. Lo yiftach adam lechatzar hashutafin. What's a chatzar hashutafin? Mas a chatzar? Chatzer? A courtyard? Mas a shutaf? Shutafin? Shared, partnered, unified. The case that the Mishnah gives is a case where we come together and make this our courtyard. When we come together and make this our courtyard, meaning it's not a Rishut HaRabim, it's a joint collective Rishut HaYachid. In the context of that collective Rishut HaYachid, we need to make sure it's a halacha that our doorways don't face each other. Meaning this Mishnah brings out the dual aspect of what Sefer Midbar is all about. What's the dual aspect of Sefer Midbar? It's the rise of the individual in the context of the beauty of Klal Yisrael. Each individual, it's a context where we're all unified in one chatzer, where Rishut HaYachid, Klal Yisrael is a Rishut HaYachid, they're an Am Levadad Yishkon, they're a Rishut HaYachid. Kineged the Rishut HaRevim of the rest of the world. We're all Mishutaf, we're all Arevim Zelazer, we're all connected to each other, of course we are. But in that context, we have to recognize that what allows us to exist as a people, as the people that we are, is if we maintain that reality of privacy. And that's why the Gemara says, Menahani Mile. Where do you know this from? What's your source? Amar of Yochanan to Amar Kras, the pasuk that the Gemara actually quotes is not the pasuk about Tovalecha Yaakov. Vayisa bilam et inav vayaret Yisrael shochin lishvatav. Each shevet in its own way. Each shevet unique. Each shevet by itself. Each shevet by itself. Part of this chasher atzutaf, part of this chatzer that is the beautiful chatzer of Klal Yisrael. All unified, all one, all in partnership, all working in tandem. But each respecting the fact that they have something unique to bring into the world, and that can only happen if there's that reality of privacy that remains. And I think that that is... to finish the Gemara. Mara'a, what did he see? Ra'ash ein pitcheo aleihem mechuvanim zelazeh. Amar, he said, ra'uyin halalu shetishre aleihem shechina. These people are deserving for the Shechina to rest with them, on them. When the Shechina rests with us, when we link ourselves to God who is infinite, to He who is the source of bracha, then bracha comes in. How does bracha come in? Bracha comes in when we maintain a reality of that tzniut, that I keep things away from open eyes. And that's what allows HaKadosh Baruch Hu to funnel that infinite reality within us. We maintain a reality of privacy, maintain a reality of kavod, maintain a reality of Hashrat HaShechina. Nationally and privately, nationally and in each individual home. That's what's being brought out here. We need to be an Am Levadad Yishkon to fulfill our goal in the context of the nations as being a nation of bracha. And so Bilam comes and tries to be mekalel us, to limit us, and is unsuccessful, and when they're turned into bracha, it all emphasizes our interaction with the nations, that a nation that is that which it isolates itself so it can remain a reality, an identity of tzniut, because within that reality of tzniut, it's funneling in the infinite, and therefore can be the channel of all bracha for the entire world. That's one of the realities that's being explored for this new generation that's about to go into Eretz Yisrael. Now that we're about to go into that place where it's supposed to happen, the national bayit, we have to learn what the national bayit is, and we have to learn about what the personal bayit is, again. And that's where it's being brought out here, in contrast to the nations of the world that we're going to be surrounded by. To foreshadow next week's shiur, by concluding this week's parasha, what then, how does the parsha conclude tragically?
Going beyond the boundaries of just...
When we're sent the Benot Moav, and the Bnei Yisrael are mezaneh with Benot Moav. They're unfaithful with the Benot Moav. What do they do? How is that the destruction of everything that we just talked about?
Brings back the call.
Because we're bringing in those outside elements into us, to look at us, be shalit on us, to look and gaze in the realities that they're not supposed to see, to break the purity of the Jewish home, to break the privacy of the Jewish home, to break the uniqueness of the one-on-one relationship between a husband and wife, between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because it eventually leads to also serving Baal Peor. That's the conclusion of this bracha, because it's the total antithesis. It's literally it's the klala being shared that's the opposite of everything that we establish in the context of Parshat Balak. They experienced that breakdown. They experienced the ramifications of opening up those tents. They experienced the ramifications of letting the outside world so deeply, far too deeply, into the Jewish home, into the Jewish realm, into the Jewish nation, in a way where that breakdown led to reality of klala, which is why at the end, the first time and only time, we're given a number. 24,000 Jews die in the plague that came about through being mezaneh with the Benot Moav. How can we fix it into a finite number? Because we broke down our connection with the infinite. And suddenly then we have a number. I strongly suspect that that's why that stems exactly from the conclusion of the discussion with Balak and Bilam. not wanting to leave on a negative note, but just wanted to fill out how that, I think, concludes the parsha and why that's linked. I was struggling with that. Even though next week we'll talk about more connections and more of the flow of the narrative, that piece was missing for me until this all came together. I was like, that's what it is. That's what Bilam understands. That's why he tells Balak, there's no way to break their bracha. There's no way for me to curse them on top of their baruch state. Then the only thing you can do, Balak, I'm gonna give you advice. You want to break their baruch state? I can't be mekalel on top of it. But if you break it from the inside out, if you break their connection to the makor habracha, then it's over. Then Klal Yisrael can fall apart. Because that's their whole koach. That's the whole koach. What this brings out for us is a lot of food for thought in terms of who we're meant to be as a people, that we're meant to be unified while maintaining our individual identities, which is the theme, really, of Sefer Bamidbar, that we keep on coming back to. It really does follow through. It's really exciting to see that keep on surfacing. That we're meant to be those who channel bracha into all of the world. We're meant to be the source of bracha for the entire world. But for us to do that, for us to be those people, when we design our homes, literally and figuratively, we have to design those homes of privacy. But even before we get to literal homes, that in our lives, we have to live lives that maintain boundaries of privacy as well. Because it's only in the context of that privacy that bracha can channel into our own personal lives. We live in a world, you know, we can go on this forever. We'll take one small slice of the distortions of the modern world just to make it practical, and then we'll end on this. You know, we live in a world where we go on and everybody's obsessed. The thing that you go on, immediately when you go on your computers, you have to go on to Facebook. Lo alinu. Shem Yirachim. Right? Sheker of the modern world. That Facebook, face panim, which only takes the external of it, panim is a face, but in Hebrew, panim is also the same word as pnim. My outer face should be an expression of my inside. And instead of my face being a public face with limitations of my own internal world and a specific choice of expression of self, I do two things on Facebook. I don't do either because I don't have Facebook. But I see two things happening on Facebook when I have to go through our Facebook page to get to the JLIC page. I see two things happening on Facebook. One is, and there's endless literature on this, it's not a chidush. One is endless sharing of every detail of my life and breaking all realms of privacy. We've taken that which opens up the whole world and we've put our whole lives in front of the world. Hope nobody takes this personally. I guess you would be if you did it, but like, I heard somebody told me this recently. I haven't seen this. I've only heard about it. But evidently this is a new thing that like now when people get married, that they post on Facebook immediately a yichud room picture. This is a new thing. I hope it's not true. I hope it's not true. And you realize what a broken world we live in. You walk in, the whole point, first of all, halakhically, ramifications beside the point, but like, you're supposed to be isolated in that space. Like, grabbing, holding each other and being, we're in, it's like, yeah, you're in Yichud, so that's the one place the world should have to have, there's no, you're taking away all the bracha of your whole marriage. Bracha doesn't rest in a place that the eye can see. That's why we lock the door and put guards there. That's the whole point. But that I'm saying that there's almost no realm left where there needs to be, that there's privacy. That there's a part of us that I don't share. And second of all, on the flip side, when we do share a lot of times, from what I understand what Facebook is about, is you create an online, you create a Facebook identity that doesn't necessarily match your own identity. It's not even true to who you are. That we live in a world that's all about forcing us and pushing us and fighting with each other. I heard from somebody recently at a conference who was talking about these issues, about the fact that like that one of his he was struggling with one of his students who was like getting anxious because until I may be using the wrong word, where you post photos immediately on an app, Instagram maybe, yes no maybe could it be Instagram, could that work, could that be true? Yeah. Okay, I'm not totally off. It could be Instagram maybe. Like until this person had like his good unique new totally different Instagram picture of the day, like he couldn't focus on anything. It was done. His day couldn't start until he found something new, a new way to share himself with the world. But his whole reality was defined. It's not just one person. This person is an unfortunate byproduct of the culture that we live in. A culture that's anti-tsniut, that's anti-boundaries, that's anti-borders, that's anti-recognizing that there are spaces that should not be seen, should not be experienced, that belong between God and the Jewish people, that belong between a husband and a wife, that belong for each one of us, between myself and HaKadosh Baruch Hu and my own Kodesh HaKadoshim, that belongs to nobody but me. And my relationship with my spouse belongs to nobody but me and my spouse. and our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's a lot of food for thought also, what that means. Just in Orla Vayim also, fine, true. That between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there are boundaries of what we share with the world. Because when we open ourselves up on every level of being, when we expose ourselves, we're no longer v'heyei bracha. We're no longer v'nivrechu bracha kol mishachot adamah. We can't be a source of bracha for the world. So b'zrat Hashem, we should be able to build up a healthy balance of sharing ourselves with the world, but keeping up orders and boundaries that are supposed to be met. So we keep funneling the bracha and the shekhinah into the world in a way where we bring abundance, shefa, beauty, glory to the entire world. We bring bracha to Klal Yisrael and through us. V'nivrechu bracha kol mishpachot adamah. B'zrat Hashem.